My mobile device tells me it's 1 o'clock. And since I am ruled by my mobile device, I used to think I was so cool because I got a Mac. I've been a Mac user for 2 years. No Windows, never again. And I found out I'm hardly cool. Because this is what's cool. Okay, everybody show me your mobile device. What do you guys got? Let's do a little inventory here.
S4.
S4? So what's that, Samsung Galaxy?
Samsung Galaxy.
How many Apple people here? How many Samsung people here?
Android.
Okay. So it's split. It's only Android and iOS.
Yeah.
Nobody on BlackBerry. Oh, thank God.
Did you say that really?
Yes.
Okay. So I am cool.
StarTAC.
Or Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Windows Phone.
Anybody on Surface?
Obama Phone.
I'm still waiting for the first Surface user. I heard. Do you have a Surface?
No,
Mike had one. I know. I heard Mike has one, and I'm still waiting to meet my first Surface user. So I'd like to see it. So I'm here to talk about Bravepoint's ability to put your applications on mobile. Now, if you guys, anybody know who I am? I know nothing about application development. I mean, I'm a database guy. I worked at Progress my entire career in the database group or in development, working on databases. I can 4GL my way out of a little bit of web speed. I can only do reporting. God forbid if I have to update anything, because no matter what, I will end up having a deadlock in the application for sure. So this is not who I am. But Dustin's over there. So I'm playing the role of sales guy, which is kind of a fun role. So we're going to talk about the Bravepoint Evolution product that we have. And we've had this product around for a long time. We have this Evolution methodology and framework that we have been successful taking people and modernizing the application through the web. So we've been using WebSpeed and some other technologies to allow people to bolt on the side of the application and put some really, really cool web some web front ends on them, all using Ajax HTML5, where it's really cool, where you can have a table and you can dynamically pick which columns you want to hide or move columns around. So it's really cool stuff, and that's our Evolution product. Well, we've brought Evolution to mobile because this is the future. I mean, Progress is telling us it's the future, but Progress wasn't the only one telling us it's the future. The way we do it is we use the Corona SDK, and that should mean something to you people. It doesn't mean much to me, but it should mean something to people that does mobile development, because it's pretty much the standard out there. It's open source. We'll talk about the benefits, and then Dustin's going to take over. So why don't you go and see what the next slide is.
There you go.
So we're a software development platform and methodology, really, for people modernizing. As I mentioned before, it was really web-based before. Application Evolution allows you to deliver your application to the browser using Web2.0 Ajax while reusing your existing server-side logic. And this has been very successful. We've done this for dozens of customers, and it really has modernized the app and let them go sell into markets that they were otherwise blocked out of. Hit me.
All right.
Okay, so now Evolution, we move this to eMobile to extend this Evolution framework.
That's about all.
Okay, and it is based on Corona SDK. Who knows what Corona SDK is? Okay, so if you do a Google search, which I had to do to learn how to do this, so I was like, what's Corona? The only Corona I know is the one you drink, right? So I went and looked, and the number of hits you get on Corona is in the tens of millions. So this is really a platform that certainly people know how to use. There's over 200,000 developers worldwide. It's a hybrid approach, which is the right way to go. So you build it one time, you can deploy it to all the cool people using Apples and also the other people that are using the Android stuff. Hey, how was that?
Not good.
Not good.
Wrong
sales fanboy.
Okay, and it's written in Lua, so go next.
Yep.
So Lua is a very, very popular language. It's very much like the Progress 4GL. So if you know the 4GL, you know Lua. And it's very used predominantly in the gaming industry. So it's an embeddable scripting language. It combines procedural syntax with powerful data description constructs. Boy, doesn't that sound familiar, right? Lua is distributed in a small package, and Yeah. So it runs on all flavors, Unix and Windows. And the important thing is Lua is free. So a difference between what we're doing here at Gravepoint, what's happening at Progress is runtime of this doesn't cost you anything. If you use our platform, at the end of the day, it gets deployed. There's no runtime cost for anybody because it's all open source, open source SDK to do development, and the open source free Lua to do the runtime. So it's an alternative to what Progress is doing, and I know we're kind of in competition here, but I think it's good to see what the opportunities are. Open source has its place, proprietary has its place. One might be better, other one might be better. Benefits of eMobile, use the same code, basically go across platforms, supports local storage, easy to use language coupled with elegant APIs. I'm just reading here. Sidesteps platforms a little bit. Coming to Windows soon for that Windows user. I gotta go talk to him after this. Mike Fechner, beware, I'm coming to see you.
Okay. One Windows phone guy?
Well, no, he's got the Surface.
Oh, okay.
He bought the Surface. As far as I can tell, he's got the one. Because I have not met anybody else that has one yet. But I'm told that he has it, so I want to go see it. Okay. I'm done. I'm the sales guy in this role.
Yeah.
Dustin is your man.
All right.
Dustin's going to take us through this.
Okay. So
if you have any pricing questions, well, don't even ask me. I'm the database guy.
You're not quite the sales guy. You're not the numbers guy. That's it. All right. So we've pitched this particular framework a few pug challenges past couple years. This is what we've been working on. The one thing that we've done in the past is everything stopped pretty much at the HTML, JSON level. So we're working on the framework that basically pumps just data in and out to Progress. And we focus mainly on rich internet applications, so everything being web-based. And that was mobile web, desktop web, and that's how we pretty much reached everyone. So what this does is fill the niche of where you actually want to have something native running on the phone, because the only way to access things like your camera and any hardware on the device is via actual native applications. And so Corona is one of many frameworks that gives you those Objective-C or Java-based modules for the respective frameworks, Android, iOS, Windows, all that, that will let you interact with their camera devices and other things that you can kind of, some of them I've shown in the past, you could use HTML5 to help do geolocation, but you're not actually using the GPS on the phone per se, and you certainly can't do anything like upload photos or touch the photo library or the camera. And the reason why I keep mentioning that is that's huge for a lot of the apps we've been building. We have one that does services for fire suppression companies, lets them go into the building and actually scan things like barcodes and tags on objects. And you just can't do that with a web-based, purely web-based front end. So I'm going to try to explain away all the little arrows and everything. So let's just say that the local DB for us is Progress. This framework in general, it's mainly, we're just talking the front end. You can actually put pretty much anything behind it, so long as you can speak right now we've been speaking JSON RPC, but it could talk to any REST backend. So if you can design a backend that is REST compliant, that means you can go directly to Progress REST. You can now go to Node.js, an API layer written in Node that does REST. Any of those. So we're still using the web to communicate. We're still sending data packets. So we'll just say LocalDB, LocalDB is on the device itself. We actually haven't really pulled in quite yet data from, let's say, the home office. So customer listing, this may be the first thing you're going to get, and I'm going to show this on the demo in a minute. So you got a list of customers. That's going to probably be delivered as a JSON data set of sorts. From there, you can, of course, move into your customer info, view the details, move further on, edit the customer info. Well, what happens with that data? Well, first time in, we're of course going to make some sort of RPC request or a REST request. We're going to get the list of customers. That's going to bring it down to the phone. We're going to sort of transparently put it in the local storage area for the phone. When we move between the various screens, we're not actually going to call the home office for anything. We've already downloaded all the data, or at least the data that we need. Hopefully the customer list was a finite, short list. You search for John, you got all the Johns, or search for Smith, got all the Smiths. So you've got the list, you've got your customer info. Let's say when you do actually save the data, normally there would be some sort of request that writes it back, both in two places. It's going to update your local database, which may happen just after it confirms that it was able to write it back to the home office via that remote API call. And so that back and forth data, that can also be trapped. So let's say that if you go offline, you're in an area with bad cell coverage, the system should be smart enough to say, I can't make that request. I'm just going to save it to the local database, and I'll resync as soon as I'm back and available on a usable network. All right, we're going to walk through a couple of the various screens and some of the, a little bit of the code behind it. So here's our customer listing. So we have definitely MVC pattern going within this framework. Anyone familiar with MVC, Model View Controller? It's basically a way of abstracting your data structures such that you don't have everything thrown into one big monolithic file. You have data or your code logically broken up into very distinct actions or purposes. So model in this case, customer info model defines, think of that as your temp table. That's defining what fields and data should be available, what data type it is. Your view is exactly what it sounds like. It's how you present the data, or sometimes it's called the presentation model. But just so that we're not confusing models here, this is the view, is what we'll call it. And then the info controller, or just controller, that actually is the glue then that says what needs to go where. So how do I, what are the rules for applying the fields in the model to the view, or fields on the view? So here's some examples. So we have a series of includes, and I might have to read off of the it's a little warpy up there. So customer info model, that requires a pre-built model called customer info model. The info view and the info edit view, these are just pre-built files. They're basically pulled in and used sort of on demand. So when you move from here, that info controller, the action of actually clicking on something here actually does the requirement of the necessary files and essentially says load these files so that I can present the data to the user. And like I said, the controller acts as that glue. So as you make your modifications, say you take that info view from a read-only state into a read-write state, you can now modify your various fields, and on edit of those flows back into the controller. Now, what does the controller do? At that point, the controller decides, well, do I need to save the data? Am I online and capable of saving the data? Do I need to just stash it in the local database? That is all up to the info controller at that point. And there could be just a local controller for this particular action, so a customer view controller. Or it could rely on higher rules. It could say, all right, always take the customer data, put it back in the local database, and then there'd be another controller elsewhere that says, okay, every time that I see data pushed into this local table, do I need to then try and resync back to the home office? So just to be clear, MVC pattern helps you break everything up. There can be multiple models, views, and controllers within the application, each doing distinct subsets of data, so you may have an order subsystem that has its own MVC. You can have like an application level model viewing controller. Another example, so the info edit action goes through, switches the view as needed. Again, this is, actually I jumped ahead a little bit, this is switching into that read-write mode. So like I said, when you edit, it then decides whether or not it needs to go back to that home office, do that home office call, or just save locally. And kind of just illustrating more of how the data flows through. So the product, yes?
Where's this, if you've got two people updating the same record, where's the resolution for that?
That's on the server side. What we have right now, because this works primarily against our evolution framework, which really is more of a back end piece. We've written front ends that work with it, but it's more a matter of as long as you have the back end piece, it's almost sort of self-documenting. And on that back end piece, there's special fields that get added to the data structure, such as a checksum that says that when this record was last updated, and here's its checksum. So let's say somebody else modifies the record after you've already downloaded it to your device. When you make that modification and it tries to save back to the server, those checksums, of course, are going to be different. And then the resolution comes at that point back more as a message of, sorry, your edit's been superseded. You need to
run a date or something like that.
Yeah, basically, you're going to have to take the data that was there. Right now, we don't have anything like smartly merges that says, well, your edit was later, but it didn't affect the same fields as the last edit. Right now, it's just the record's changed. We need to refresh your local copy. Sorry, you're going to have to redo your edit. Because I mean, it could have been you were modifying the same thing that somebody else was, a phone number or address.
Right, and even more, you know, even if you weren't modifying the same thing, your decisions might be different if based on what their previous modification was.
Because we're entirely stateless, we don't have the ability to do all the before table and after table and seeing exactly what changed without having more logic on the back end. So right now, it's just a very simple checksum.
The application itself should handle that.
Yeah. Yeah, the application that you design, you should decide how you want to best present that to the user to manage their data conflicts. But yeah, we can tell you that there was a data conflict. That's already built. So the productivity, maintainability, reusability, extensibility, all benefits of MVC. Again, sometimes it's a lot of people that we've ramped up on MVC patterns, and we use them on our web-based front ends. We now have one. Corona out of the box doesn't really have any methodologies. It's here's the toolkit. We have resources for you to go find out how this stuff works, but you're on your own because you know we're not going to tell you how to build your app. It's just an SDK. So we've actually built this MVC on top of it. So we have a team that's working with this technology and is actually building the common data structures and methodology to help you create applications with this pattern. And for some people, it's hard to wrap your head around this. But like I said, if you break it down to a model is essentially the temp table. It tells you what data is going to be there. Controller tells everything what to do, and the view tells you how to present it. That's really all there is to it. All right, so the framework itself, just for the curious, since we're all developers here, let's look at some actual code.
Wait a minute. Not all of us.
Present company excluded.
Yeah.
I was referring to them.
Okay.
Not both. No. So here's a quick example. So we want to put a field on the screen. So this would be the list of fields that's in the view. So we're going to access the custom field, and we're going to create a new field view. The parent in this case is a scroll view. In iOS, they're called tables. Corona, I believe, calls them a scroll table or a scroll view. I'm not 100% because I'm not involved in the MVC. The guys doing the MVC work, I don't know if scroll view is their construct or Corona's, but for sake of argument, there is a scrollable view. So something, you know, when you flick on the screen and it scrolls up, that's the scroll view. So they have a little snippet of code here to help me out, showing me how the framework actually requires the right fields, creates a new area in which to put the fields. You specify what the parent is, so it's going to put this field into this scrollable view. It's going to give it a label. The action in this case is none, so this is a read-only field. We can't do anything with it, really.
And the data, the text that we're going to put in there is data.custom. So data was maybe a record that was fed in to this particular view or controller. Controller said, hey, go show this data on the view. The view created the scroll view, put the field in, and told it what value to put. It's almost no different than if you're familiar with HTML, basically putting in an input type equals text, value equals whatever, giving it a name. That's about it. All right, so what else can you do? Field view class using in place action. So in this case, you see way down on the, so over here, the action in place. So they put, that basically says you're going to edit right there in the field. And this is the nice thing about, you can do this on most of the HTML-based frameworks, or at least on the phones that support HTML5. You can actually change the format of the data that goes in. So you can say this is going to be a number-only field, and you know how it'll just actually pop up a numeric keypad. I don't know if you've noticed that sometimes on forms. Because you're working native here, they actually have a way of changing those keyboards on the fly. So this one here, down here, it says text, data, phone. There's actually input type phone. So not only is it a keypad, but it actually gives you like that special key at the bottom with the plus, asterisk, and pound sign, so that if you needed the format, you know, with an extension number or something, you have all the keys that you need to input a phone number. So the basically idea here is being able to switch the keyboards, and you have a lot more control at the language level, saying, no, I definitely want this to appear as a phone keyboard input, and it should stay that way. You're not at the mercy of, okay, well, if I tell my HTML web page that this should be a number field, well, it may render differently on Android versus iOS versus Windows Phone, and I've actually seen that. And even between different models, different versions of the operating system. Yeah, go ahead. All right, field view class using a pick action. Again, another idea of, where's my line, I lost it. Action pick, data is terms, table, it's actually saying, well, since we are going to populate this thing somewhat dynamically, behind the scenes, we still try to carry through the names of our tables so that we know what they are when we get to the back end. So this was temp table customer, TT customer. We gave it which row we're actually working with. The column is called terms, and then of course there's options. There's our drop-down list. So if I were to tap on this field, of course it would give me a little pick list selection. I can scroll through and pick the one I want, and that's it. Next. And then I asked for some demonstrations of the other widgets that they have. So switch, basically if you have a logical flag, this is how you typically represent it, with a little on-off switch. How to do a button, time pickers, which basically it looks like, you know, a fully formatted 12 or 24 hour clock, but it gives you like the individual hour, minute, and meridian selections. Okay, more framework. So more options. Basically, this is the kitchen sink demo that they screenshotted for me, the mobile framework team. So all the different widgets that you can pick. The email and phone fields are actually special. Those, when you actually tap on them, if you're on, since you're on your phone, clicking on the email field will actually open your email program and, you know, start a new message. Same for the phone, you tap on it and it actually starts dialing. So that's one of the other neat things, is that that behavior doesn't always carry through on a HTML-based application. It may, I know iOS kind of tries to smartly highlight the phone numbers, but it may not catch like the full extension. It says, oh, this looks like a phone number. I'm going to make it a link, and then I'm going to ask, did you mean to call that number?
What about text messages?
All right, so I'll switch and run my demo. I probably have to rejoin the wireless. All
everyone knows that too. You put your phone to sleep, and then next thing you know, you're having to rejoin the hotel wireless. Yeah, it is. Could you at least remember me for a few hours, not just put it to sleep, put it in my pocket next time? Oh, I gotta sign out again.
Yeah, they help them. They'll at least give you 24 hours.
Yeah.
I'm 24 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll see. This should. It says that it's. Yeah, there it goes. All right. So.
Now that in itself is pretty cool.
How are you connecting?
Okay.
How are you connecting that for the display there?
Lightning to VGA adapter.
Just
as soon as I plugged it in, it said, "Oh, I'm gonna mirror."
That's cool.
And
yeah,
no fiddle.
But you guys didn't do anything for that.
No, but I'm just talking about coolness. I got my Mac now. Now it's the mobile. Everything's getting cool. I'm just so behind
here.
The times.
You can do that.
Yeah. I'm like, wow.
The only problem I have with Apple is
you buy that.
I was waiting for the applause on just that one.
But yeah, I've been running the whole thing off the iPad.
Thanks, Shelly.
Is that micro USB to the phone or what?
No, this one's the lightning adapter.
Oh, the lightning adapter on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is just an iPhone 5, so, and this actually seems to work a lot better than the old 30-pin connector I had.
You get that for
I forget what. I don't know if they have the VGA. What was that? Android uses that MHC connector or something.
Yeah,
that's it's like the it's HDMI.
That's a micro USB.
There is another app called the Reflector app. That one works in a different approach, so it's not by just plugging to the VGA adapter. So you have a piece of software that you can run on Windows or on a Mac.
And I've got that. So yeah, I could AirPlay if I'm on the same wireless, but I've already found there's on this network I can't like do peer-to-peer. It's blocked. I can't see my phone on my laptop and vice versa.
But
I don't know if anybody else has tried, but.
But Ansel, you're so cool.
Yeah, that's screwed me up.
I got so much room to go.
So this one is our, what we called our Mobi demo. Pardon, needed a sip. All right, so this app we actually put out in the App Store already. I believe it's out for Android and iOS. I don't know if they've cross-compiled it out to the other, they couldn't do Windows because that's coming soon. So I think it's just those two, Android and iOS.
Why would you?
I don't know. So this is out on the various app stores. And this is talking to a server that we stood up out in the wild. And so it's actually communicating with our framework on the back end using all the our favorite, the Sports 2000 database. So, you know, I can type in. And so, you know, got my sorting. I've already downloaded some contacts. I'm sorting through. I'm looking them up. There's my information. I actually did this earlier. Apparently, yeah, just clicking on the number, it doesn't quite give you the, are you sure you want to dial notice, which would be nice, but I don't know if that's the framework or the phone just saying, oh, I'm just going to dial it. But yeah, it really does dial. If I wanted to go in here, I could say, let me edit the customer's address. They moved down the street, much like Breakpoint did many years ago. So we'll change that and hit sync. And if my Wi-Fi is working, it should actually tell me, yeah, it's been updated. So there we go. 6000 Maple Road. There's some options here. Like, let's say I didn't actually change anything, but I think just by hitting that button, because I didn't save anything, I might actually have to report this as a bug, unfortunately. We'll see. This will at least maybe illustrate. No. Maybe I just had stale data on my phone earlier, because it actually I wanted to show what it actually does when you hit a record that's been updated out from under you. And I think I may have just had some stale data in there that it said, oh, well, this record's already been modified. Sorry. Okay, so edited. There you go. So 6001 Maple Road, Amherst. And then there's all the little details. So this, again, we just set up some APIs to bring back this data for us. We can look at the orders. And yes, I even wrote a script that fixes all the dates in Sports 2000, so it's not eternally 1996.
I bet you had fun doing it.
Yeah. It'd be nice if maybe 11.4 comes out with a slightly updated...
That's first on their list.
Yeah, we're going to take them away from you.
Oh.
We're just going to take them away from you.
Pro Copy Sports 2000, still 96. And so we return, you know, order information. We can go back and look at the list of orders. You kind of got the idea. Here's an example of actually using the maps feature. And this did work earlier. I think at this point it's just... Yeah, it's just not downloading all the map data.
This is a nice place.
Way off.
That's China.
This is Apple Maps.
Yes, so God only knows where we're going to end up. There we go. Maple Road. There we go. Okay.
Oh, nice.
So we encountered a glitch in the matrix there for a second, but there we go. So... Yeah, it said Amherst, New York. That's about more where I figured, so. Yeah, it's a little better. So there we go, using the actual, the real Maps app within your application, not just, you know, what the browser says, oh, I'm gonna attempt to guess your geolocation and or plot this point. And just trying to hit all the various things that we've created. So they took a lot of care in setting up this demo. They actually tried to put like images with all the various items in the catalog and tried to organize things just to give an idea of different views that you can have of all the various items in the... There we go. So yeah, just... And this does also come back to the point I always make, which is, you know, only try to tackle what you can in mobile. So this one's just focusing on, well, if you are a salesperson out in the field, what do you need most? You don't need invoicing. No, you need to look at your list of contacts, your customers, maybe what they've ordered. So we focused on only certain items. You may get asked the question, well, what do you carry in your store? Oh, well, let me check the catalog. So, you know, we're only trying to focus on the things that would be applicable in a mobile environment. And
Dustin, how much effort is it to build something like this?
Unfortunately, I can't answer that because I'm not on the mobile team. I'm on.
Can you guess?
I'm on back end support. I would say now that they have the MVC framework, it's significantly improved. I would say building something like this, maybe a week or two, which is not much considering that you don't also have to get ramped up on Objective-C or now Swift, so the new language coming for iOS. If you know Java, well, there's still enough differences that you have to get used to on the Android side. So, yeah, I mean, when you take out the overhead of learning the additional languages to support the various frameworks, and then having to do all the regression testing. I mean, yeah, definitely test. If you're targeting specific phones, specific models, of course you want to test. But the idea is that, you know, Corona and all these other makers of these frameworks are, you know, doing their best to make sure that this framework should abstract away, you know, your geometric problems, so different screen sizes between different phones that'll help address that. I'm sure if I were to run this on an iPhone 4, which has the shorter screen, it would still work just as well. It would scale accordingly. So, you know, it's gonna draw everything as it sees best fit for that device. I think they're actually working, the MVC model does right now predominantly support phones. It supports tablets as well. But it's more a matter of you have to, in your application, make use of that additional space. It's the same problem they had with at least for Apple, when they went from the phones to the tablets, basically the first apps that showed up on the tablet, they were just double-sized phone apps. So you actually have to make the effort to go in and, you know, create a code base or fix your code base so that it's aware of the much larger geometry, not just the simple differences between phones. This one's 800 by 600. This one's 780 by 640, that sort of thing. We're talking the difference between the phone and the tablet, and actually gear your application to support both types. So, actually, that's about it as far as the demo goes. We didn't really have any slides, so questions?
Yeah, I don't know if I caught everything about what it's written in. Lua is the embedded scripting language?
That's the scripting language. It's similar to, does that answer your immediate question, or was there a follow-up?
Yeah, just how it all ties together. Does that scripting language generate HTML5 and JavaScript, or is this all native?
No. Once you write it in the Lua scripting language,
yeah. That
is what gets cross-compiled into the various native formats. So it's similar in the respect that for the Progress mobile builder tools,
yeah. That's
predominantly based in jQuery. So when you're dragging and dropping your components and you're writing all your code, it's in terms of HTML and snippets of JavaScript that tie everything together. And then when you're ready to compile, it actually goes back to the back end and either generates your .apk for Android or sends it off to the Mac Mini running Xcode to compile down to a iOS.app.
This isn't a hybrid then?
Not an HTML hybrid.
Right.
Where that one is, I think there's certain things that it calls out, like, okay, you've written it in HTML and JavaScript, and somewhere in there is a library that it says, all right, I set up when I click on this button, I'm going to access this service that accesses the camera. Well, that service that accesses the camera is this little module sitting out here. And so you're doing a JavaScript call to say, open the camera app.
In this?
No, I'm saying on a hybrid
right. App.
This is probably very similar, where in Lua you're saying they gave you a bit of script to follow. It says, I want to open the camera. Again, there's probably something written in Lua or already written in Objective-C or Java
yeah. For
the respective system, the device, that says open the camera for that
okay. For
that type of device. And so when everything gets compiled together, it ends up as an actual native application.
Okay.
For the HTML ones, I don't know if they still sort of run in their own little web view, like a little widget that essentially it looks and acts like a embedded web component.
Okay.
So UI web view.
Yeah.
Container in that PhoneGap
uses. And that's what I was thinking of was this is similar to PhoneGap and several others. Titanium, Aptanium?
Accelerator. So Titanium actually compiles down to the right language, so it's actually building full native apps.
Oh, it does?
So that's different.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure what Corona does.
Yeah. Corona, I think once you write it in Lua, because it's not HTML, it's not JavaScript, it's not something that any of these devices
yeah. Knows
natively,
yeah. That
you can't show it and just like throwing it into a web browser,
right.
Have it run. Maybe this is not quite the same hybrid approach as that.
But Lua handles the portability, so
yes,
same
but
call.
it does do that. This
so
is it still does the write once, run anywhere type.
Yeah, so it'll thing. Be native Android, native iOS.
Yes. So it does at least do that.
And
actually, there was another point that
and I just
still
while
thinking.
While he was doing the demo, or not the demo, but his slides, I looked at the just to see how pervasive these technologies are. Lua, I googled Lua mobile, and I get 7 million hits. I didn't just do Corona because I would have got the beer. So I did Corona mobile, and I got
Corona Labs,
and I got 37 million hits. So
yeah. So
these are very pervasive technologies that are being
yeah. Used.
And
I'll mention, because I saw this. This is
used by, is it Kony? There's one of the big players that includes Lua.
Yeah. Lua's huge in gaming.
It's huge in gaming. So that's why I
And that's why I Googled Lua Mobile to get the 7 million. If I just did Lua by itself, I'm sure I'm getting, you know.
Yeah, because the...
Was that Lua?
It's still always mobile.
Yeah. And I was going to add on to that, if you look at Corona Labs, their website, and that is it's coronalabs.com is the parent page. And I think I briefly mentioned that, yeah, Corona, the SDK is predominantly for game developers because they have, you know, a lot of the embedded OpenGL and a lot of those 2D and 3D transformation libraries that, of course, you need for the gaming. And most of their immediate demos revolve around, you know, here's how you set up a quick game and how you know, adjust the gravity in this world so things bounce and drop accordingly. But if you keep going, you'll see eventual demos and people writing these types of more full-featured apps, or traditional apps, if you will. I mean, but the nice thing about that is, it's geared more for gaming on the face of it, but that means you're not really limited on your UI. You don't have to use a table view if you don't want to. You can do something completely drastically different. We're going for just the more pedestrian tables and grid type views and everything. And I think because we are still using their framework, I saw somewhere on one of their blog posts an experimental feature where you create your application in Lua, but instead of cross-compiling it out to an actual phone, you compile it down into something that basically can be used by a web browser. And they showed one of their game demos loaded into so here, you can run this yourself. You just have to have a browser that has the WebGL library, and not all the browsers have that yet. I think in iOS 8, Safari will have it embedded. But I want to say Chrome definitely has it. Safari may have it. But they actually showed, hey, look, we're actually running our phone app on the web. So it's like they've gone completely the other way with some of their skunk works, trying to actually get the apps to run. So wouldn't that be nice if you then could go the other way, run it on all these different phone devices, and still, if you want, fine, you can run it on the web.
You could use that like for a preview of apps.
Yeah, you could do like a test drive almost and say, here, play around with the app in your browser before you go buy the real thing. So, any other questions?
Only interesting comment. Well, from a demo point, interesting, because when you're touching, you don't really get to see anything. It's not like when you're doing a laptop where you see a mouse movement and we can tell when you click. Here, when you're doing stuff, it's like all of a sudden the screen just changes, but you really don't see any clue of what you pressed on.
Yeah, I think there's very subtle changes. So like
it may catalog so at the top. You can't even
right.
see it.
Yeah. Like if I tap and hold, you see the baseball icon actually changes slightly.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. It's And that was something what we always said on the HTML side is, you know, you just can't take a website and make it work because everyone loved those hover menus. Oh, let me hover over this menu and it automatically expands. Now suddenly that sort of thing breaks because you can't hover. Right. You either tap it, which in most cases takes you to like the top menu item. So, yeah.
So how many people are doing mobile?
That's what I was going to ask.
How many people are going to do mobile? I mean, I would imagine that you're either here because you're thinking about doing mobile or you're just wondering.
For us, someone's eventually, but for us, like, most of our mobile is not a phone. Most of our mobile, because of what we're doing, for an e-commerce site, grandma's got the tablet, mm-hmm. okay? And for that, they can go to the regular e-commerce site because the screen factor right. is appropriate, and that makes a lot more sense. You're not gonna shop through a bazillion products really on a phone. First of all, grandma can't even see the phone, right? It's too
yeah.
small. But for at least for us, for a lot of it still is mostly more the tablet factor, which as long as we make sure the regular website is, you know, works touch friendly enough on a tablet, we're okay. But eventually we'll probably need more phone.
Are there prerequisites as far as versions?
As far as versions of
progress.
Not really. In fact, this whole thing is, I did want to emphasize that the idea of the eMobile framework here is that you don't have to have progress on the back end. We're showing it actually talking to progress because we already had the framework and everything built.
because that's what BravePoint does.
Yes.
You know, we're a progress shop for sure.
But they do wanted to make sure that we emphasize that this is for people that are not progress. So if you already had something with one of those SQL backends, and sure, you can.
Can you use role-based on the backend?
I assume if there's a REST, if you could talk REST to it, then yes, you could. Yeah, because all the requests on the back end, they're still going out to an HTTP host, this URL, and doing a GET or POST.
So I think to Patty's question, this isn't 11, this isn't 10.
No.
This could be any progress database from our standpoint.
Or Node.
Or Node, yeah.
Well, when you say database, you don't really mean database.
Well, I do, but that's all I know.
We don't have a REST API on our database.
Right.
Yeah.
It's got to go through something. Logic, of course.
I'm just checking.
Yeah. Works great with evolution, as you see.
Yes.
I mean, you don't use SQL. You can't go directly to SQL, can you, from anything? It still has to go through REST.
Yeah, you'd still need something a server to handle those requests. One way or another.
And typically, now that you guys have done this some more, if you were going to do something where you had, let's say you don't have the back end already conveniently there from an evolution, that would really be a major portion of the whole project.
Yeah.
If you were going to do it, that portion's probably a lot bigger than this front end portion, right?
You're probably referring to the whole separation of your business logic, how do I not do that?
APIs and all that.
Yeah, you still need to go through that. If that's the business logic you plan to use on the back end, then yeah, you still need that step of separating it out so that you can call them as remote APIs.
But we have experience here where we've had success and we've had failure first, and then success later, of just biting off small pieces. You don't have to do, when people say separate your business logic from your UI, it's a daunting task, oh my God, right? But where we've had successes is we're biting off small pieces of it, doing it in a small portion, and then exposing just that way into the application. And that's it's still a big task, but not as big and not as daunting as when somebody says that, you kind of go, that's never going
to
happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to the degree that you have taken it, it's also kind of driven by how far you
exactly, how far you want to go. And what we found is for a lot of our customers, they don't really need to go that far. This web stuff is a bolt-on. It's not changing everything. It's just making the part that they want to make sexy, sexy.
Find your pain point.
And spread your pain out.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I can't think of anything else to pull in. So.
If you're interested and you want more information, great point. I mean, you know us. I mean, we have a whole product suite or framework that we do. The team's busy. We are, like I said, we've been very successful in the web. We've had some success in the mobile space, and you know, we're happy to help anybody that wants to go there and get some guidance.
Yeah, so you say the back end framework supports both the kind of web model and the
back end supports both, yeah. Okay. Thanks. Yeah.